Blog Talk Radio.
Take a licking. There is someone waiting who will hurry up and rescue you. Just call for Super Chicken.
Welcome to Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer, brought to you by Menapro, providing the best quality products that your animals deserve at a value you can appreciate. Menapro, nurturing life. My name is Andy Schneider, but most know me as the Chicken Whisperer. My co-host is poultry advocate and author of City Chicks, Chicken Tractor, and other great titles, Pat Foreman. Today is Tuesday, March 29th, and I would like to thank all of you for tuning in this afternoon on Blog Talk Radio. This is a live radio show that is broadcast around the world. This radio show is all about keeping backyard poultry, show poultry, and living a self-sufficient lifestyle. You can follow the Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer radio show 24 hours a day at our website, chickenwhisperer.com. That's chickenwhisperer.com. From there, you can follow us on Twitter, become a fan on Facebook, visit our blog, sign up for our monthly e-newsletter, The Chicken Scratch, and get all kinds of great Chicken Whisperer gear. If you're listening live today on Blog Talk Radio, I invite you to join us in the live chicken chat room that's going on right now. You can talk with other Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer fans and other chicken owners from around the country. You can also ask any questions you may have for our special guest when we have them on. All you have to do is click on the Chat Now button there at our homepage at Blog Talk Radio. Take a moment to register. That'll get you your own unique, fun, and creative screen name. Then you can come on in, sit a spell, have a great time, meet some new friends, and talk all about our passion and hobby of backyard poultry, show poultry, sustainable living, urban farming, urban gardening, and anything else that might tickle your fancy. I would also like to invite you to mark this radio show as a favorite and request to be on our friends list while you're there at Blog Talk Radio. We hope you'll take a moment to do this today. And again, I want to thank you all for tuning in to Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer, brought to you by Manapro.
Manapro is committed to providing the best quality products that your animals deserve at a value you can appreciate. No matter the animal, no matter the product, you can be certain that Manapro cares as much about the well-being of your flock as you do. So try one of the many poultry products offered at a retailer near you. Manapro, nurturing life.
Manapro understands that poultry owners are as diverse as the birds they care for, which is why they offer both medicated and non-medicated starters. Whichever product you choose, you know you're getting great nutrition for your new chicks. Look for Manapro products at a retailer near you. Manapro, nurturing life.
You've ordered your new baby chicks and even have the brooder prepared, but now it's time to order that new chicken coop. My Amish Goods offers quality-built chicken coops for every size, flock, and budget. They have many styles and colors to choose from and will ship them fully assembled right to your front door. Act now and receive a special upgrade at no additional charge. Visit them online at myamishgoods.com. That's myamishgoods.com. Ideal Poultry has been a family-owned and operated business since 1937. Their business is built on customer service and quality poultry. From rare white and brown egg layers to broilers, ducks, turkeys, and bantams, Ideal Poultry is the largest supplier of backyard poultry in the United States, shipping close to 5 million chicks annually. Visit them online at idealpoultry.com. That's idealpoultry.com.
Established in 1957, GQF has become the name to trust when it comes to quality products and superior customer service. GQF offers a wide range of poultry products, including incubators, brooders, feeders, waters, and much, much more. Give them a call at 912-236-0651 or visit them online at GQFradio.com. That's GQFradio.com.
And the mighty bird against prejudice continues his fight for law and order. So when you hear that cry in the sky, you'll know it's Super Chicken.
All righty. Thank you very much for staying with us today on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. We have a great show lined up for you today. But before we continue, it is now time to welcome my wonderful co-host, poultry advocate and author, poultry talented, Pat Foreman. Hey, Pat, welcome to the show.
Hey, Whisper, glad to be on the show. Whisper, guess what happened last night?
Oh,
this is so cool. Guess what happened last night in Rockbridge County?
That's a loaded question. Let me think.
I know it. You always come up with such creative answers.
What happened to Pat last night?
To the whole county. Rockbridge County, Virginia.
The radiation alarm went off, and y'all had to take cover due to the spill in Japan.
Yeah, that's that Kiev chicken joke, isn't it? That we call a radioactive chicken a Kiev chicken? No.
Okay.
No, that's not what happened.
Well, fill us in. What happened last night?
Oh, it was so cool. You know, we have been for the last, oh, my God, this is the third time. It's been over 3 or 4 months where the Planning Commission had to review. Let me start at the beginning. There was a complaint, an anonymous complaint. You know this story.
Oh, yeah.
And so, yeah, here we go. So the anonymous complaint, nice lady, but anonymous complaint went forward, and the complaint was against Rob McDonald in this Cedar Grove subdivision, really nice subdivision. Houses $250,000 and up. They were really, really nice subdivision. He just happens to be the dean of faculty at Virginia Military Institute, and his daughter was so attached to these chickens, and he thought he was doing everything legal. So we petitioned the county planning, the county planners, and then they got it on their schedule. They had a public hearing. A lot of people showed up for the public hearing. They unanimously voted to send it to our county commissioners, who have the final say. So then last night was the county commissioner meeting. Mm-hmm. And I tell you, the room was packed. We must have had over 50 poultry advocates there. And we told everyone to wear either red or orange just to stand out. Some people did, some didn't. But it was absolutely packed. And the testimonials that were coming up, I mean, there were two people against it, basically saying they didn't think it belonged in a civilized high scale area like that. The chickens just weren't quite the thing. But all the others, including myself, spoke quite well pro chickens. And it was interesting that when the and some of the neighbors then came to speak on behalf of how when your grandkids come, boy, their kids head right over to see the McDonald's chickens. I mean, they're like a beeline over there, and they just enjoy having them next door. So all this is to say, it's almost like the county commissioners could hardly wait to vote yes. I mean, they were all sort of smiling and chortling, and it was a unanimous vote to allow residential county areas to have 6 hens in their yards. I mean, how cool is that? So it's
as we always say here, our little catchphrase on the day on the show: power to the poultry. Power to the poultry.
Power to the poultry.
And of course, nonetheless, a big contributor to that, I'm sure, was that county commissioner that attended your class over the weekend to get knowledge, to get education on the true facts about keeping backyard poultry. And nonetheless, I'm sure he shared it with others, and voila, chickens are now allowed there. So again, we can add that to our list of about 80-85% of the cities across America that, when approached with good factual information, allow their town to keep backyard poultry. That's fabulous news, Pat.
It is fabulous news. And then we all went out and had a nice big celebration at Mikado's afterwards. It was just and then now there's going to be a poultry poultry potluck, poultry pioneer potluck, I think, or some big party that'll come out, because we still have the city of Lexington to go yet. They're starting to soften quite a bit, but with such an incredibly strong turnout and unanimous votes and endorsements from not only the county planners but the county commissioners, so we're moving that way. What was really neat, though, is that I introduced, of course, the whole issue. I introduced again the whole thing about using chickens as biomass recyclers to help decrease the solid waste management, and I think this time they listened. I handed out a little diagram how simple it is. All that food waste and yard leaf waste headed to a dump truck versus with family flocks. It's the food waste goes to feed the chickens, and then the chicken manure goes to make compost and enrich topsoil and take care of the yard and leaf residues. You know, there's no waste in zero systems. There's only residues. So that, I think, we're going to move forward. I'm giving a talk along with Professor Bill Hamilton of the Biology Department of Washington and Lee about composting later in April, and I think that might be a good time to start to get this research project up and going and get some funding for it. So all that is to say, you know, it all works out. It always all works out, but we were so happy. I mean, it was literally a yippee-yay from everybody afterwards, and pictures and smiles and congratulations. It took about 20 minutes for people to clear out of the courtroom. It was great. I mean, I was just high as a kite. So anyway, so that's what I did yesterday evening, and it was just absolutely so gratifying to see the community coming together. And we were even talking over at the restaurant how people were meeting people they never dreamed they would have connections with, and it was just a blending in. And as I remember the mayor of Madison, Wisconsin, remember this quote where he was saying, you know, it's odd, but chickens are really bringing us together. It's no yoke. He went on record as saying that. So yeah. So how's your day going?
So far, so good. That is great news. Thank you very much for sharing with that. Yeah, so far, so good. Busy. Over the weekend, I think I got it on Friday, but of course we had already left Thursday evening and got another, I don't know what you call it, another final copy. I guess it's not final copy, a preliminary copy of the book. So I've got about 3 days to go through it, make any changes that we deem necessary, and get it back to the publisher. So I'm frantically going through and reading the book over with a fine tooth comb, looking for this, that, and the other. So I've got that kind of going on my plate, amongst other things, but so far, so good. And, of course, we are broadcasting live now across the world here on Blog Talk Radio, and we want to thank all of our listeners for tuning in live, and, of course, the ones that tune in via iTunes and podcast.com, zoom.com, and, of course, listen to the archives on blogtalkradio.com. So we thank you for joining us. We've got a very nice, a lot of great folks in the chat room. It's pretty packed today, so you never know what's going to happen. And we have a wonderful guest coming on today, author and historian with the Society for Preservation of Poultry Antiquities. Christine Heinrich is going to be here, and she's going to be sharing her knowledge all about the Java. And so many of our listeners do have Javas in their backyard flock, so we're going to tune in and hear more about that. But again, before we do, as always, it's about a quarter past the hour. It is now time for our Chickens in the News segment. Chickens in the News is brought to you by Meyer Hatchery up in Polk, Ohio. You can visit them online at meyerhatchery.com. Pat, do you have any chicken? Well, you kind of shared some really good news with us earlier, but do you have any official Chickens in the News articles for us today?
Well, I do, but first I've got this really interesting vignette, and it's about 2011. I just was fascinated by it. It says, in this year, 2011, we're going to experience four unusual dates. And I've never really, in my lifetime, I've never quite saw this before. And here's the unusual dates. January 1st, 2011, January 11th, 2011, November 1st, 2011, mm-hmm. and November 11th. 2011. But that's not all that they came through this little email. So they're all 1111.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah. I know what that means. I have no idea. But it says if you take the last two digits of the year that you were born take the last two digits of the year you were born and add the age you will be this year, the result will be 111 for everybody. Whoa.
It works for me.
Isn't that bizarre? So, anyway, this little email says that this year in October we have 5 Sundays, 5 Mondays, and 5 Saturdays. It only happens once every 823 years. So October, 5 Sundays, 5 Mondays, 5 Saturdays, once every 823 years. So it's got to be some sort of auspicious, I'm sure, sign about this 1111 and what an unusual year 2011 is. So I was fascinated by that little trivial fact. I thought others might enjoy it. Well, I've got one other piece in the news, Whisper, but why don't you go ahead and share one?
Okay, I have a short one here. And again, 'tis the season. Thousands of people across the country are getting baby chicks this year. People who have had chickens for many decades and people who have never had chickens before. And so this is an article, and currently it doesn't specify the cause of the fire, but I definitely wanted to bring awareness, as we always try to do, with heat sources here on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. But a fire, well, the title here, and this comes to us from News 13, Baby Chicks Die in Fire at Orlando Feed Store. Baby Chicks Die in Fire at Orlando Feed Store. And, of course, this was in Orlando. Firefighters say they are investigating the cause of an early morning fire at a feed store in Orange County. The fire started about 1:30 a.m. Monday at Orlando's Palmer Feed Store on the corner of West Church Street and Westmoreland Drive. Firefighters were able to eventually put out the flames, but not before several baby chicks inside were killed and much of the building was seriously burned. No reports of injuries. So now, it doesn't say anything in here about the heat lamp for the brooder, but every single year, and you know, we hope we don't have to report on any of these every year, but every single year, we do report to you as we see them come across the news wire, chicken coops that have burned down to the ground, brooders that have burned down to the ground, and even, yes, personal homes. People have lost their entire livelihood in their home due to faulty and dangerous heaters, both in brooding chicks and in their chicken coops. So, again, every year we try to share this with you, though no cause here has been determined, but we'll see if it may have been that heat lamp that they were using to keep the chicks warm. So, folks, the point here is just be very, very careful. Just about every heat source can be a fire hazard. Some are more dangerous than others, but we really want you to take heed and take care and use extra precaution. If you're brooding chicks this season with that heat source, use an extra few pieces of duct tape to try to secure that lamp. Use extra duty chain. Do whatever you can. If you're going to do brooding this year and use some type of heat source, again, they can all be a fire hazard, to use due caution and protect yourself, because we've seen people's homes burn to the ground because of a six little baby chicks. So you want to make sure you just, again, protect yourself from the fire hazard that these heat lamps and other heat sources can cause when raising baby chicks as a brooder, or if you're one of the few that you choose to heat your coop in the wintertime, again, do what you can to protect it from the fire hazard. So that's one that I want to share with you. Pat?
Oh, okay, yeah. Well, this one is kind of an indicator that we're starting to hear snippets of around the world. This comes to us from the Economic Times, and it comes to us from India. And the headline is Chicken Soars. Chicken prices soar on costly feed and low production. And what they're saying here is that the cost of chicken feed and lower production has pushed up chicken prices, at least in southern India. And normally the chicken prices drop when summer approaches, but because of corn, the main ingredient of chicken feed has risen so sharply, I'm just going to translate it from rupees into percentage, they've gone up over 25%. The cost of corn that goes into the chicken feed. So because of that, it's pushed up the poultry prices because their basis is higher. And what they're saying is that because of that, there was probably a further crease that was coming down the road because maize prices, corn prices are still going up. There's an upswing, and they don't know when that's even going to end. But what's also interesting is usually during this time of year, there's a decrease in the price of chicken because of the Lent season. This is one of those seasonality things. And apparently, in at least from India, Christians tend to abstain from eating meat during Lent. I didn't, whatever. So fearing a drop in the prices, the traders did not stock up enough birds for the March-April season, and as a result, there's been this severe shortage in the market for chickens in India. So that's just an interesting cultural as well as economic things in the cost of the base ingredient, which is corn in this case. So what do you think of that, Whisper?
I know the corn's going up. We've been watching it and following it, and it's just amazing. All food's going up, if you haven't noticed, when you go to the grocery store. And, of course, for many different reasons, fuel cost goes up. Our food goes up, of course, because you think about the tractors. You think about a lot of the fertilizers are petroleum-based. And again, I won't dwell on it because most of my regular listeners have heard about the time I was in the frozen food section commenting about how our food's going up because of diesel cost and fuel cost. And the lady next to me in her tennis skirt was like, why would fuel costs make my vegetables go up? So then we had a nice little chat about educating her. So, the food's going up, the grain's going up, and we've been talking about this for a long time. So we'll see what happens. Some are forecasting $5 before summer on our fuel in some parts of the country. So we'll definitely see what happens. We'll see what happens with that. I've got one here from Mother Nature Network, and we all have known for many years that Reese Witherspoon, actress out in Hollywood, has chickens, and she's been, in fact, just about on many of the late-night TV shows that she's been on, she's talked about her backyard flock, and this comes to her from Mother News Network. Reese Witherspoon married down on the farm. In the company of pigs, chickens, and celebrity guests, actress says, I do for the second time. Reese Witherspoon got hitched on March 26th to entertainment agent Jim Toth in front of family members, friends, and a bunch of horses, chickens, and pigs. The 35-year-old chose to have her second wedding. She divorced actor Ryan Phillippe in 2006 at her 6-acre California ranch. In a 2009 interview, she said she purchased the property just outside L.A. because it reminded her of her childhood in Tennessee. We have chickens, and we grow cucumbers and tomatoes and love it. In fact, Reese has so many chickens that she's earned the nickname Chicken Lady from many of her neighbors and friends. The chickens are laying more eggs than she can eat, so she started giving eggs away to her neighbors, parents on the kids' soccer team, and her friends. Perhaps eggs were a part of the wedding favors. So there you have it, another major star that keeps backyard chickens in her behind her home. So very cool there, and we've known that for a while. And but wanted to elaborate on that since she just got married and got married on her little ranch in front of chickens and pigs and other farm animals. So how cool is that?
That's mega cool. She's one of my favorite actresses too. Mm-hmm. In Legally Blonde. I mean, I could just watch that one forever. I thought that was a brilliant movie, but she's so talented. Yep, definitely a chicken celebrity. She is. Mm-hmm.
Yes, very good.
Hey,
yes.
Do you have another one, Whisper? Go ahead if you do.
No, you go right ahead. I'm done.
Well, this one is really interesting to me, anyway. It comes to us from World Poultry Net, and I don't see an author here, but it says that poultry studies the effect of the incubation, how incubation can affect leg strength. And, you know, as incubation can have so many widely variables as humidity and temperature and, of course, the quality of the chicks inside the egg as well. But what this study is saying is that temperature and humidity during incubation can affect the long-term leg strength of fast-growing meat birds, which is broilers. And this comes to us from the University of Sydney. And the study examined the impact from two different sets of incubation conditions on early growth rate. They studied early growth rate, bone composition, and leg weakness in a purebred line of broiler chickens. And with the initial findings showing that these were indeed measurable effects from the alterations in temperature and humidity. In other words, the leg strength did change based upon the differences in temperature and humidity. And they're saying that a high incidence of leg deformity is what triggered this off, and it was a Dr. Peter Groves and Wendy Muir were intrigued by a field report of unusually high incidence of leg deformities in two separate hatches of this pure line of the grandparent. And these chicks were at a primary broiler breeder facility, and both problem hatches were hatched in the same incubator. And they both suffered, and that incubator had a sudden loss of temperature for 2 days, and despite the correction, had run with a lower relative humidity throughout the entire incubation time. So according to the doctors, Dr. Groves, the leg weakness is currently targeted, I mean, this is how we currently address it in animal science, is you look at it through proper nutrition management practices, and then you look at environmental conditions. But what they're saying is if the proper incubation regimes affect the long-term leg strength, there's another avenue for research to mitigate this problem as an important animal welfare as well as economic aspect. So it goes on a little bit more than we want to go into, but I thought that was just really, really interesting. And I've always wondered that because when we had the our organic free-range poultry farm and we were incubating, we were collecting, we had our breeder flocks and we'd collect the eggs and then incubate the eggs and then brood the chicks and then put them out on pasture. There were a couple of hatchings that were just kind of hatches from hell. It's like all the chicks just had really terrible, most of the chicks had really terrible problems. And one of those was just due to older eggs. We picked up some eggs that someone wanted us to breed, and they were over a week. And I didn't think much about it at the time, but now I know and won't really do that. But the other one, I just wonder if we had been tracking the temperature and the humidity levels, if that wouldn't have made a big difference. And I've always kind of wondered about that. So here's evidence that, yes, having them constant or having them with the proper levels really can affect leg weakness, at least in meat birds. So isn't that interesting?
Mm-hmm. Very much so, very much so. Always bringing you the latest and greatest in chickens in the news here on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. Sometimes we'll have articles that make you go, and sometimes we'll have articles that'll make you just ruffle your feathers and get all ticked off at the world, and then we'll have some chickens in the news that'll make you giggle. So right here on our Chickens in the News segment on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer, you never know what Pat and I are going to bring to the table here during Chickens in the News. Well, perfect timing as always. It's about half past the hour, which means it's time for our next commercial break. And you know what happens after the commercial break? We're going to come back, and I've got two announcements, and then we're going to bring on our special guest today, author and historian with the Society for Preservation of Poultry Antiquities, say that nine times fast, Christine Heinrich. But I do have two special announcements when we get back after the break. Actually make that three, including what today's prize is from eggcartons.com. Not going to want to miss that. So we'll be back right after this short break, folks. So stay with us.
Looking for something? Find it online at Bidbird Auctions. Bidbird.com is an online auction service that caters specifically to the poultry, waterfowl, game bird, and pigeon hobbyists. With so many rare and exciting species listed daily and in a wide variety of categories, you'll want to visit often. Join hundreds of the nation's top breeders that have made Bidbird Auctions their new home. And get sold on Bidbird. When you need an incubator, think Brensea, the incubation specialist. Brensea has been a world-leading manufacturer of incubators for over 30 years. Incubators from 7 to 380 eggs with high-quality electronic and digital controls, including precise humidity control and programmable egg turning, all at surprisingly affordable prices. Visit them online at Brensea.com. Brensea spelled B-R-I-N-S-E-A. That's Brensea.com or call 1-888-667-7009. Enter the coupon code WHISPER at checkout and save 10% on their incubators, brooders, egg handlers, and other incubation accessories. When you need an incubator, think Brensea, technology you can trust. Ritter-Cages.com is your one-stop shop for all your critters' housing needs. They stock a wide selection of supplies and equipment for rabbits, guinea pigs, hamsters, mice, rats, ferrets, chinchillas, chickens, and other small critters. Their chicken selection includes chicken barns, chicken coops, and chicken yards from top manufacturers. Your critters will love their selection of quality products, and you'll love their low prices. Visit them online at critter-cages.com. That's critter-cages.com. First State Vet Supply is your one-stop shop to keep your birds healthy and happy. They have a wide selection of medications, vaccines, vitamins, wormers, and much more. Every product comes with specific directions and doses for your small backyard flock. Have questions about a sick or injured chicken? Take advantage of First State Vet Supply's Ask the Chicken Doctor program. For just $25, you can have a personal phone consultation with Peter Brown, also known as the Chicken Doctor. The consultation fee is waived if you purchase a product from First State Vet Supply. Visit them online at firststatevetsupply.com. That's firststatevetsupply.com. Pictures of chickens on aprons are common across America, but picture a chicken wearing an apron and you'll probably get a good chuckle. Laugh if you must, but nothing protects hens better than the Hen Saver Hen Apron. Hen Saver Hen Aprons protect your hens from the damage caused by an overly affectionate rooster and may even provide protection from an unexpected hawk attack. Hen Savers come in several different sizes to fit both bantam and standard-sized hens and roosters. Colors include camo, denim, navy, brown, khaki or black, and soon pink. Crazy K Farm is expanding its already colorful Hen Saver collection to include the color pink. A portion of their sales will be donated to organizations that fund breast cancer research and awareness. Order your Hen Saver aprons today at hensaver.com. That's hensaver.com.
How would you like a punch in the beak?
Actually, in reality, I am Super Chicken.
Alrighty, thank you very much for staying with us today on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. Let me get over here to the switchboard. We'll bring my co-host, Pat Foreman, back live on the show. Okay, three real quick announcements. Number one, Tuesday, always brought to you by EggCartons.com. Good friend Scott over there emailed me today's prize, which happens to be a very, very cool wire egg basket. Let me go ahead and tell you a little bit about it. One lucky listener today is the right caller during our chicken trivia contest is going to win a 10-inch wire egg basket. Retail value, $20, $19.95 plus shipping right to your front door. So just be the right caller today with the right answer to our trivia question, and you're going to win a 10-inch wire egg basket. Measures 10 inches high, holds 6 to 8 dozen large eggs, and it happens to be the perfect basket for use with their incredible egg washer. So 10-inch wire basket from eggcartons.com. We appreciate them being a longtime sponsor of the radio show. And so one of you going to walk away with that awesome 10-inch wire egg basket today. So how cool is that? Also, big announcement today. This Friday, April the 1st, we not only start one, but we start two chicken coop contests here on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. Not one, but two. And so we're very proud, again, to be able to truthfully say, Pat and I, this radio show, we've given away more chicken coops than anybody on the planet. We've given away more prizes, chicken-related prizes, than anybody on the planet, thanks to our awesome, awesome sponsors. So let's start with the one that probably the majority of you would want to be interested in and participate in, that we hope you participate in both, And that is, we're going to start again. We've had this in the past. It's very cool and very tense and very stressful, but people seem to love it. The Password Collection for Poultry Protection Chicken Coop Contest. We're starting another one. This one will go for the entire month of April. Every radio show, we will announce sometime during the show a secret password. We will also post that secret password on our Facebook and Twitter accounts. There will be 20 total passwords, as far as we know right now, and one for every show, you know, Monday through Friday, five shows in the month of April. If something should happen and an emergency occurs and there's no radio show one day, then we'll have two the next day to make up for it. So we'll end up hopefully having 20. So just follow along here. Every radio show, if we miss a radio show for any reason, illness, sickness, emergency, travel, whatever the case may be, then the next show we will make up for it by having two. So, password collection for poultry protection. And then on the very, the last day, let's see what day it actually would end up being to give you the official, let's see. So we'll have, looks like on maybe Friday the 29th of April, we'll take the correct caller. Pat and I will announce the correct caller. You will call in, and if you can recite all 20 secret passwords, then voila. You're going to win this awesome chicken coop, from critter-cages.com, and it's the premium chicken barn, and I believe it's valued at about, I want to say around $350 to $400, and really neat design. And so that's going to be our chicken coop contest for the month of April, starting this Friday, April 1st, and it'll run for 20 radio shows. And then on that next day, you'll have to call in and then recite the all 20 chicken secret passwords. And if you do, then you're the winner of that awesome chicken coop. And don't forget, we will be posting these on our Facebook page as well, so we can incorporate our Facebook fans, Twitter followers, and of course listeners. And then, but you do have to call in that day, the last day, with the secret passwords. So, and be the correct caller. Then you win this awesome chicken coop. So that's number one. Number two, we are also this Friday starting again the Chicken Coops for Classrooms contest. We just got done with one. We had a great school up in Missouri win. It was an awesome, awesome time. And for all of April and all of May, starting this Friday, April 1st, all of April and all of May, anywhere in the country, the lower 48 states of this great land, you can nominate a local public or private school to win this grand prize. Now, it's an amazing grand prize. You're going to get, or the school actually will receive, a dozen hatching eggs from mypetchicken.com. They will receive an awesome incubator from brensey.com. They will receive an awesome brooder kit, a brand new brooder kit from critter-cages.com. And they will get a brand new chicken coop from Ware Manufacturing. They will get a couple of Pat's books. They will get my book. And then, wow, what an awesome prize that is. So that's going to last all of April and all of May. Chicken Coops for Classrooms. This is our second one. We just got done awarding an incubator and chicken coop to a great school, I think the college school up in Missouri. And so all you have to do, and we'll tell you on Friday, but basically what you do, you just have to email the school information, the principal name, their contact information, their address, your information, and then a paragraph, four or five sentence paragraph, of why you think this public or private school deserves this grand prize. Now, they do have, the winner is chosen by a panel, and you have to, the school already has to be showing an effort to be more sustainable. Do they have raised bed gardens? Are they already hatching out baby chicks? Do they have a recycling program? Do they have a composting program? Do they have a healthy lunch schedule? Do they have something using solar or wind power? So, so the more the better. And then, and even if they're trying to go that route by implementing smaller things, that's great too. Everybody's going to have a chance to win this awesome grand prize package from all of our sponsors. So, we've got both of those starting this Friday on April 1st. How cool is that. So we'll officially kick those off this Friday on Fun Friday, when we do have tons and tons of prizes to give away this Friday. So very neat. All right, it is now time to go to the phone lines. Our special guest today, fourth. Normally she's on the third. I believe the third. No, I think this is right. Anyway, our wonderful friend, author, historian with the Society for Preservation of Poultry Antiquities, our wonderful friend, Christine Heinrich. Welcome, Christine. Welcome back to the show.
It's always good to be here, Andy. Good morning.
Good morning. How's everything out there on the West Coast?
Well, we're drying out. We've had the rainiest winter ever, and out here on the coast, we've had the highway wash out in a couple of places, and we've been without power on a number of occasions. So it's we're definitely looking at a tough winter. It's Highway 1 is a scenic highway that goes right along the coast, and unfortunately, in one place, part of the highway just fell right down into the ocean. Yeah, that closed the highway. But then about 40 miles south of there, a mudslide covered the highway. So there were people in that 40-mile stretch that were completely cut off from the world for a couple of days. So they were able to open one lane of the highway for about an hour and allow people to at least get out and to bring some supplies into them. So it's definitely... you know, it's wonderful. We're normally very dry here, and we're always struggling with water issues, but we've had so much rain this year. The local reservoir is overflowing. So,
wow.
Yeah, yeah, that's been exciting. So that's what we're doing out here, keeping ourselves busy. But the chickens don't seem to mind. My girls come out in the rain. They they get pretty muddy, but they don't seem to mind that at all. I was interested in some of the things you were talking about. I like the idea of having a hen as a bridesmaid for Reese Witherspoon. Yeah. What fun. She's definitely got a sense of humor.
Very much so. I think that was great. Perfect.
That is great. I'm wondering about the Virginia Military Institute's daughter. I wonder if she'll include chickens in her bridal party someday.
Well, you never know. Maybe roosters at salute, too.
That's right. The possibilities are endless.
They really are. I mean, just have a chicken joke wedding. Everyone would have a great time.
That really, it would be wonderful. So thanks for bringing that to our attention.
You're very welcome.
I wanted to talk about the Auburn Javas this month. Actually, this is not my usual day. This is actually the fifth Tuesday in this month, Andy. That's how that worked out. It's the end of the month. Usually I am the fourth Tuesday.
Okay.
The article that I wrote about Javas is in this most recent issue of Backyard Poultry, which is already showing up in people's mailboxes, and if not, by today, you'll have it soon if you're a subscriber, or you can purchase it off the newsstands. Most of the large bookstores that have extensive magazine selections will have it. And if you're not a subscriber, it's really they're doing a wonderful job in covering the whole world of backyard poultry. I did receive mine yesterday, and I see right on the front cover, the lead story is Seven Myths Surrounding Urban Chickens by Pat.
Hey!
Yes.
Yeah, we're published together here, Christine.
That's right. We're taking over. We're taking over.
You know, over. There you go. Yeah.
Power to the poultry.
Power to the women of poultry.
The women, yes. Yeah. Women are associated with poultry. Anyway, before we get to those other fun things, I did want to talk about these wonderful Auburn Javas. One of the things that's interesting about this is most people who have Javas are familiar with them as black or mottled, and that's a kind of black and white feathering, and there is also a white variety, but this Auburn variety has been unknown for over 100 years, and it started to emerge a few years ago. The story is that Garfield Farm Museum in La Fox, Illinois, had focused on the Java as a historically accurate bird to keep in its museum, Flock. The museum focuses on the 1840s time period, and so they started keeping a flock of Javas, and they had some people who were very interested in them and were working well with them. They made the connection with the Chicago Museum of Science and Industry. Tim Christakos, who is the exhibit specialist there, wanted to use, he wanted to hatch chicken eggs as part of the genetics exhibit. So Garfield Farm Museum made the deal with him to provide him with hatching eggs. Now, this was an exceptional opportunity for a rare breed, because usually one of the problems, you know, they're rare. There aren't a whole lot of chickens, and you don't get a chance to hatch many eggs. So they were suddenly able to hatch as many eggs as they could provide, and they started hatching about 8,000 eggs a year.
Wow.
So this, yes, this was a huge step ahead for the Java. And in the course of hatching that many eggs, the white variety appeared a couple of years ago, back in the 90s, and that was a surprise to get a pure white bird. And then in 2003, an auburn bird hatched for the first time. Now, Mr. Christakos is a geneticist. He's a scientist. He knew what he was looking at, and he was very excited to see these because they had been mentioned back in the 1850s in some of the documentation that the Java fowls were either black or dark auburn. But in the last century or so, none of those auburn birds had been seen. They had disappeared. So he was excited to see this first one. It was a hen, and a few months later, a male hatched, and he mated those together. And in their first clutch of 18 eggs, they hatched 4 pure auburn birds. So he has been working from this very small start with a breeder in Illinois, Lyle Beal, and he is now raising a flock of these auburn birds to restore this to viability. So it's, yeah, Mr. Christakos was so excited about it. He said, as a scientist, I am essentially seeing a bird that was extinct come back to life. And he said it's really the crowning achievement of his career.
There's a question in the chat room someone had put in. Was the auburn a spontaneous mutation?
It was. Now, this is, you know, there's a couple of breeders who say, oh, it's just an ordinary sport. You know, that remains kind of unknown. Mr. Christakos is convinced that this is, that these genes were in the genetic pool there, but there weren't enough of them to come together and actually be expressed in the physical color of the feathers. I suppose that I'm not sure how they would determine whether this is sort of a garden variety sport or if this is really harking back to those earlier days. My guess is that since there is some discussion of this, there's some documentation of it in the past, that probably Mr. Christakos is correct, and this is the reemergence of a variety that was previously lost.
Great. Yeah, well, that's what they were saying, Christine, about the genetics, that there are so many potential traits that are there and because the Javas are a foundation breed, they're not a composite from any other breed. They're one of the major and antique foundations that there's so much that we're just beginning to explore about what might come out of these different crossings. So
That's right. And this is one that we can see. It's obvious because it's a feather color, but there are other things that we just have to wonder about. You know, the ability to be a good parent, resistance to various diseases, these things that you know are being treated with medicines. What if it's possible to find those actually naturally resistant strains?
Right. And also the ability to forage or the docility. I mean, there's
exactly
a whole long list of traits that besides, along with disease, to all kinds of diseases. I mean, not just avian flu, but it might be even infestations like worms.
Exactly.
We know that some breeds are more resistant to internal infestations than others. So, yeah, this is kind of the tip of the iceberg. Christine, do you know, is this part of the genetic, the avian or the chicken, what do you call it, the DNA project where they're unraveling chicken and dinosaur and all this DNA?
You know, I don't know that the Auburn Java is part of that at this point. I doubt it because I think they're working more with industrial breeds. But that's a very good question. That would be an interesting subject to explore. Maybe some of the people who are involved in that would be on this program and would be willing to talk about their work because that would be interesting to know more detail.
Yeah, very much so. And really, how does it compare with our today's super chicken? You know, what really happened to the genes?
Exactly.
Because the Javas were dual purpose.
Right.
And now when you take that dual purpose and then breed it out for the meat or just all for the high production eggs, what really happened to the code? And that sounds like some sort of a postdoctorate research project, but it certainly could be interesting.
It could be, and there that raises a lot of very interesting questions about those industrial birds with their very high rate of metabolism and very fast growth rate that really cripples them because they can't even walk properly. I think that's an area that deserves a lot more spotlight, and I think that as people... there's definitely the interest there. I feel like the book that will be the poultry world's equivalent of what Michael Pollan did for beef when he focused on Harris Ranch in The Omnivore's Dilemma, I think that book is yet to be written, but I actually was talking with a poultry person last night who is doing some work in that area, and hopefully he will get that into publication because I think that people will be horrified to find out about those industrial birds and how sad and really tragic their plight is, just as these genetic mutations that grow so rapidly and have such diminished immune systems. They're not a part of the modern world that I feel I can take pride in.
Yeah, well, and even their hearts don't have a chance to grow big enough to support the muscle mass that of the breasts, and of course they get so heavy the legs give out. But and the part where the legs give out because the leg muscles and the bones themselves haven't had a chance to form.
Right.
So it is really kind of a frankenfood, and it's a little. I think it would be more humane to raise a chicken in a petri dish than it is to try to put it on some of these poor bodies that are happening.
Yeah, and that's why, you know, I really look to the small flock movement beyond backyard chickens to people who are actually raising flocks of some hundreds or even a few thousand birds of traditional breeds on pasture to increase, because there's no question in my mind that there's a market there. You know, the industry claims, you know, oh, people won't want to pay those prices for chicken, and it probably will be more expensive, but you know
it has
those
to be more expensive.
Yeah, and
but,
that's okay because we need to pay a fair price for these things.
Yes.
You know, because the farmers who are raising those meat birds on contract to the big houses like Tyson, those farmers are not being paid adequately either. They are not earning a living wage, and we need to think about those. The scandals that have emerged of undocumented workers working in horrible conditions, you know, this is the 21st century. We need to treat our workers better, and we all deserve better.
Oh, absolutely. And in fact, I can tell you when we were starting up our free-range poultry farm, we bought some metal nest boxes from a commercial farm that was going out of business. Something happened with the contract, and the guy that owned it was older. He was going to retire, but he was going on and on about how being a contract grower ruined his health. He was on crutches. He couldn't breathe. He said he claimed it was because he breathed in so much ammonia during his time, and it was just a heartbreaking story that he had given everything and had lost everything, including his health, from working in those chicken houses. So it's like, oh, surely we can do better.
Yes,
we can.
As a society, as a
we can, and don't call me Shirley.
Oh, Shirley, you jest.
In memory of the late Leslie Nielsen. Yes.
Right.
Oh, so yes, dear. and the Java would be a good bird. Now, maybe the people who are listening are interested in actually raising some of these very rare Auburn Javas. The article has Mr. Beal's phone number and his website. It has the email that I put in there for him. I was unaware was one he's not using anymore. So that email is not correct, but the phone number and the website are correct. You can contact him, and he is going to have hatching eggs available. So if you're interested in starting a flock of these, you know, he probably is going to be vetting applicants for these eggs pretty carefully, because these are such rare birds that they really kind of need a little bit of extra attention to go to someone who is a serious breeder, who can keep a flock of these, can keep the accurate records of them, and stay in touch with Mr. Beal about this to keep this interesting variety going. But for other people who want some for the backyard, the black, the mottled, and the white Javas, contact Garfield Farm or contact Mr. Beal, and he can get you those. This is a wonderful old breed. It definitely is deserving of attention. All varieties are deserving of attention, as well as this very rare and unusual variety that they have brought back to life for us.
Yeah. His phone number, I'll just say it here. I posted it in the chat room. But his phone number to contact him is at 217. And this it's in the Backyard Poultry Magazine, the April-May issue, 2011. So I'm not breaching a privacy thing here. But his phone number is 217-498-7522. 217-498-7522. It's Mr. Beal, B-E-H-L, and he is really onto something. He's passionate about this, and I love the quote at the end of this article here in Backyard Poultry. He says it's saying basically and genetically, the Auburn Java is a historic find. It's a historic find, and this is the reemergence of an extinct variety. So we're having a variety that had been disappeared, and now it's back. It's back, and so that is really something to crow about. I would say that they could bring back an old ancient variety through selective breeding of the foundation breed. He did not bring in other breeds to create this. He wanted to stick with the Java. So it's a big deal. He deserves an outstanding ovation, I think. So
absolutely. Yeah. This is major. The other thing that is mentioned in there for people who are interested in Javas is the new Java Breeders of America Poultry Club, which URL is in the article. It's kind of long, javabreedersofamerica.com. And you can join that. They are compiling a list of Java breeders. So if you're interested in getting Javas, you can go on that site and contact them, and they can put you in touch with someone who's close to you. You know, I always think it's an advantage to get birds from someone who is as close geographically as possible. Reduces travel time, and they are probably better acclimated to your climate and so forth. So and it's usually less expensive as well, so that's important. So that's check those out and join the Java Breeders of America. Even if you can't have Javas right now, it's a good way to keep up with news like this important development of the Auburn Java.
Yeah. Well, and the other thing, too, Christine, and for everyone, it's important to support the breeders. Even if you don't plan to raise them yourself, they need a market for their birds. So the more you can buy a few hens, whatever, even that helps support these antique breeds and helps give them a commercial value so they can stay around. It costs money to raise hens and to do these keep these birds over breeding season and over the years. So support your local heritage breeders by just buying a few birds from them every year.
Absolutely, absolutely. And, you know, you get the opportunity to be part of historic preservation, and you learn about them. You know, as you get these birds, you'll find yourself looking up information about them and telling others about them. And it really makes your flock more interesting. It just enriches your life. So I that's the reason I'm so involved with heritage breeds.
Yeah, well, it's true. I tell you, I've got this wonderful Buckeye hen. She's a character. She has a big, broad head. She's so distinctive and so independent. And often I'll look at her and I'll think, you know, Nettie Metcalf, the woman that bred the Buckeyes back in the 1800s, wouldn't she be proud to see this hen here now a couple hundred years later in my backyard? And I just think of the heritage that goes in behind that and what she had to do to bring that Buckeye out and how there's just been a breed conservation efforts to improve the breed and bring it back up to non-critical standards. So it touches something really primal and proud in me to have these heritage breeds in my flock. So yeah,
I agree. I think Nettie is there in your yard watching over you and pleased to see you there.
Yeah. Hey, Christine, did you go in about how he came up with the Auburn with one little hen named Minnie Me and then the male named Mork? You didn't cover that, did you?
No, I didn't. Yeah, I didn't think... He was very excited. This first brown chick hatched on September 25th, 2003, and he knew right away she was different. In the article, it hasn't reproduced as well as I'd hoped, but there is a photo at the top of three different chicks, and that little Auburn chick is in the middle, and you can see right away that this chick would stand out in the group. So he knew that there was something special there, and he knew enough of the history to know that there were Auburn Javas in the far past. So he wanted to keep her, and sure enough, another one did hatch in 2004, and that one was a male. And
Mork.
He named him Mork. Yes.
Yeah.
Those were the days, you know. So
yep. Mork and Minnie.
Yes.
Mork and Minnie.
I just got
and
that.
They,
remember
so
Mork
he mated them.
Nanu, 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 nanu.
I'm not sure what there was about these birds, but you know how it is with chicken names. They sort of name themselves.
Yeah, a lot of them do. And what's interesting is little Mork and Minnie Me, their very first clutch had 18 eggs when he put this little couple together. They had 18 eggs in the first clutch, and they out of that 18 eggs, they hatched four that had the auburn coloring. So they hatched four that had the auburn coloring. So that's almost perfect Mendelian genetics. You know, about one quarter of them would be that auburn color. So,
right. That is another thing that kind of suggests to me that this is not just a sport mutation, that this is actually some genetics that's appearing regularly in the genome there with the Javas, but just not frequently enough to be expressed. So
I put in the
it's kind of a classic way, like you say, Mendelian genetics of finding those and selectively breeding to get that trait.
Yeah.
I put in the chat room that scientists have been working very hard to create a chicken whisperer breed of chicken, but they're having a hard time finding a rooster that cocky and with a head that big.
Well, I think that's a little equivocal.
Well, the search will continue, I'm sure.
The search will continue. And then, of course, Granny Kathy in the chat room says, yeah, and they're really having a hard time breeding a chicken with a yellow hat. Or in their case, a yellow comb.
Dear.
So, very fun.
You never know what's ahead with the Chicken Genome Project. I mean,
You'd never know. Hey, ladies, we're going to take a short break. When we come back, we can finish up any kind of information that we need to about the Java, and we'll just go to break. Stay with us. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes, folks.
You have the chickens, the coop, and the run, but do you have the egg cartons? Don't put your beautiful farm fresh eggs in any old used grocery store egg carton. Impress your friends with your very own custom labeled egg cartons from eggcartons.com. They have a large selection of custom egg cartons, stamps, and labels to choose from. Pick out your new custom egg cartons at eggcartons.com. That's eggcartons.com. Hey, it's the Chicken Whisperer. If you're in the market for a new incubator, then look no further than GQF. They have a great selection of tabletop and cabinet-style incubators at prices you can afford. I love my GQF Genesis Model 1588. It has a large picture window and an automatic thermostat, which makes for a better hatch every time. Go pick out your new incubator at GQFradio.com. That's GQFradio.com. You've ordered your new baby chicks and even have the brooder prepared, but now it's time to order that new chicken coop. My Amish Goods offers quality-built chicken coops for every size, flock, and budget. They have many styles and colors to choose from and will ship them fully assembled right to your front door. Act now and receive a special upgrade at no additional charge. Visit them online at myamishgoods.com. That's myamishgoods.com. Hey, it's the Chicken Whisperer, here to tell you that if you have backyard poultry, nothing is more important than making sure your feathered friends are safe from infectious poultry diseases. Learn the simple steps to keep your birds healthy by visiting this website, healthybirds.aphis.usda.gov. That's healthybirds.aphis.usda.gov.
A message from the USDA.
Mount Healthy Hatcheries has been a hatching tradition for over 80 years. Home of the healthiest chicks, Mount Healthy Hatcheries offers a wide selection of bantams, turkeys, guineas, ducks, pheasants, and of course, meat birds and layers. Order online at mounthealthy.com, that's mthealthy.com, or give them a call at 1-800-451-5603. Don't forget to ask about their free bonus chicks offer. Mount Healthy Hatcheries, home of the healthiest chicks.
It's easy and rewarding to keep backyard chickens, and My Pet Chicken can supply everything you need to get started, including baby chicks, chicken coops, accessories, books, and free how-to information, plus fun gifts and rooster decor. At My Pet Chicken, you can buy as few as 3 baby chicks. They also sell fertile hatching eggs. Visit them online at mypetchicken.com. That's mypetchicken.com.
Ware Manufacturing has been building quality hutches since 1983. Ware manufactures modern chicken hutches, barns, pens, and nest boxes designed especially for the backyard flock. Ware offers hutches and pens for every yard size and every chicken keeper's budget. Visit their website at waremfginc.com. That's waremfginc.com. Or call them to find a retailer near you at 1-888-824-7257. Ware Manufacturing.
Actually, in reality, I am Super Chicken.
Sometimes you feel like a nut, sometimes you don't.
Alrighty, thank you very much for staying with us today on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. We have about 10 minutes remaining before it's time to start start our chicken trivia contest today, brought to you by eggcartons.com. We have a wonderful 10-inch wire egg basket that holds something like 4 to 6 dozen large eggs. How cool is that? One lucky listener is going to win that today. So both Pat, Christine, you're back live on the show, and we can continue and wrap up our conversation all about Javas and the history of.
Well, thanks. I wanted to spend a few minutes with Pat on her article on seven urban chicken myths. I think she did a great job with this. I hadn't realized that the CDC had actually put a statement on their website stating in so many words, there is no need to remove a family flock of chickens because of concerns regarding avian flu.
That's
you know,
right.
It's really good to have the official confirmation of this because they spent a lot of time fanning flames of fear in the general public. And a lot of people, I think, still carry that. And that's an important message for us to get out there that your chickens are not going to catch this, that it simply doesn't exist on this continent, and your children and your family are not in danger.
Right, right. And, you know, it comes up every single time. It came up last night in the county commissioner's meeting. And I have never read anywhere. It's so important to understand. I have never read anywhere where a small flock, a family flock, has ever transmitted any diseases to a human. I mean, none.
No.
Even the lice that chickens tend to get, they don't live on people.
No,
I mean,
they
the
don't.
The red mites might put a little irritation, but they can't live on people. So there, I think there are a lot of there are fear factors about sanitation and you know hand washes and all this stuff has in a way had an adverse effect because we become so germ afraid, and our immune systems are so bored that they're causing allergies. I think in things like the autoimmune diseases. That's my personal theory. So anyway,
well,
thanks for bringing that up, Christine, because it is an important thing. And,
yes, it is. One of the facts of the industrial chickens, those Cornish Rock Cross broilers, they're in addition to growing too fast, their immune systems are very compromised. So those birds are very subject to other things. Plus, the conditions in which they live, very crowded and in their own manure, it's an incubator for pathogenic microorganisms, viruses, and bacteria. So those conditions simply don't apply to the small backyard flock of some hardy traditional breed.
Exactly. And, of course, the workers, the people that do pick up avian flu, they are in those massive flocks, so they're actually living and breathing, and to an extent that I would guess their immune systems are compromised as well, quite frankly.
Absolutely. They're overwhelmed by the amount.
Yeah.
An interesting story, the head of the poultry department at our local university told me, and somehow he couldn't seem to put this together, but he told me that one time he and a graduate student were in their poultry house, and they bent over to see the chickens or something. And the next day, his graduate student, who was a young man, ended up in the hospital, and he himself felt very ill, and it was from breathing the ammonia in which those chickens live all the time.
All the time. Yeah.
And you know, it's like he couldn't put together that this nearly killed him and his graduate student, but somehow it's not supposed to affect these chickens. It's and of course then we eat the meat from that. It's just this is a situation in which the dots haven't all been connected for the public yet. The information is sort of out there in bits and pieces, but it remains for us to kind of champion this cause and to keep helping people understand what they can do for themselves by keeping chickens.
Well said, Christine, absolutely well said. And I think the other place the dots have not been connected is that the fact about what we as humans eat and where we eat it on the food chain makes a big difference in our health. You know,
absolutely.
The medical system right now pretty much says, oh, well, take vitamins maybe, although you'll just get expensive urine, but take them if you feel better. But there's evidence. We've got a little time for this. There's a new a term that's come out. It's called xenohormesis. Have you heard of this, Christine or Andy?
No, I haven't.
You know,
tell me.
Hormesis. I'm going to spell it. It's X-E-N-O-H-O-R-M-E-N-I-O-U-S. And xeno means foreign, and hormesis means hormone-related or biomarker-related. And what they're finding in studies is that if you eat the flesh of some stressed animal that's either had a whole stressed life or really stressed at the time that it was processed, some of those biomarkers travel up the food chain. So, in other words, if you eat, say, a piece of fish or a piece of chicken or meat from an animal that's just been on edge its whole life or for quite a while before it's processed, you'll feel some of that stress in your own body. Whoa! I mean, what's in the that literally translates to what's in that feedlot and the stress it's feeling is looking right back at you from inside your own body. Isn't that something to ponder?
You know. It is something to ponder, and I've sort of wondered about that because, you know, we face one of the major health problems in this country is obesity, which, you know, spawns all these other cardiovascular problems, joint problems, on and on. And we're eating chicken that is mutated to be obese and
that's
beef
right.
That is, you know, so, what's the connection here? You know, it just seems like, well, I don't know that there's a connection, but if I were doing scientific research, it's sure something I would look at.
Yeah, I mean, but who's going to do those studies? Where's the big funding that's going to look at the obesity gene or the weight gain gene in chickens and how it might be transgenerational to humans?
Yeah, that's not in their interest to determine that. But surely there's some public health. You know, this is where universities and the government can really help us by providing funding that is a counterweight to the research that's being done by large industries. You know, we have these very large industries, and we need regulatory bodies that are equally large and powerful to give the public a fair shake.
Uh-huh. I couldn't agree more, but good luck. Maybe it's coming, though. It's coming.
I think so.
Realize,
I think that we're in an interesting time.
Yeah, very interesting times. And, of course, no one's going to take care of your health the way you take care of your health. Because it's very interesting that I was wondering about this when I was in pharmacy school, but there's never been a transgenerational study of the effect of antibiotics on the next generation. Not one.
Transgenerational. That's interesting.
Study. And yet we use it by the tons. I mean, and of course, animal foods are laced with antibiotics to keep them from healthy in these. Yeah, isn't it? We really don't know. I mean, we know that some antibiotics, certain ones, will cause hearing loss, sometimes permanent, and then you can sometimes get it back. But there's so much that we do not know about what we're doing. But I just wanted to toss that out as an interesting vignette.
Well, that is an interesting point, Pat, and that's certainly something I didn't know, and people outside, you know, your specialized knowledge wouldn't know that. So, you know, this is information that we need to share around, and I'm grateful to have the opportunity for this program to share some of that.
Yeah, well, me too.
Me
okay,
too.
Okay, well, yeah. Before we're done here, just get that next issue, April, May, of Backyard Poultry. There's a lot more in it. There's a good article by Jeanette Berenger of ALBC on waterfowl, and there's an article on peacocks. There's just a whole lot of interesting things. There's poultry-inspired art creations. They're just doing a great job over there at Backyard Poultry.
Yeah, they are. They even have a coop makeover section, which is just a riot. It says the makeover offers endless entertainment twice.
I like the one about turning a food dehydrator into an incubator.
Yeah.
What a great idea.
It's an interesting idea. And there's another one here about how a retiree finds poultry keeping as a cure for boredom.
That's right.
You will be
endlessly interested.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
Such a cute picture on the cover of such a good mother watching over her chicks.
Oh, there's nothing more heart-rendering than that, is there? They're just, I just, I never get tired of seeing a little mother take care of those little baby chicks. What
That's
breed is
right.
it? Does it
let's
said
see,
about
she is
cover?
A Danish brown leghorn.
Wow, there it is, Danish brown leghorn. Okay.
Yeah, isn't she a pretty one?
She's gorgeous. She's beautiful. Fleur. I think her name is Fleur.
Yes.
Okay. Great.
Oh,
well,
actually,
okay, what's
Fleur
for any
is her,
final questions?
Yeah,
ahead,
Fleur
Christine.
Is her owner. The chicken herself, her name is Alice Louise.
Oh, and Louise is my middle name, too. We have something in common. Oh, dear. I take her as part of my extended flock.
Sounds
wonderful.
Like plan, Pat. Perfect. Well, Christine, thank you very much again for joining us this month. Always a wealth of information. All of our listeners out there are filling up their Spiral Chicken Whisperer notebooks every single show, and this one was no exception. So we thank you for coming on every month. And again, you can visit Christine Heinrich at her website, www.poultrybookstore.com. That's poultrybookstore.com. And I believe there's a link to your blog on that website, and of course, a whole calendar list of poultry shows going on all across the country, and chock full of other information. So, hope you have another great month. We'll see you here next month, Christine, and be safe in all your travels. I know you travel a good bit, continuing the power to the poultry fight. And so, we thank you for joining us, and we'll see you next month.
Okay, thanks a lot, Andy. Yeah, I'm going to be in a school on Friday and at the local library on Saturday, and then on Monday at the local community college. So there's a lot going on.
Perfect.
Well, and you're going to be talking about chickens at each of these, Christine?
At each of these, I'm going to be part of the Ag Day at the school. I'm going to be talking about keeping a small flock at the library, and then at the community college, they're going to be showing Mad City chickens, and then I'll be answering questions about that.
Awesome. Oh, that's a wonderful film. Awesome.
It is.
Perfect. Well, thank you very much for joining us, and we will definitely see you next month here on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. All righty, we got less than 8 minutes remaining, so it's time to get on to our chicken trivia question today, brought to you by eggcartons.com. The winning caller with the right answer is going to win an awesome 10-inch wire egg basket valued at $20 plus shipping right to your front door. And, Pat, I've got the question, so if you'll announce the correct caller or the caller number, then we'll get on with this. Yes.
Okay. How about 11, given this is the year of 11s, 111, 111, 111,
okay,
11.
Okay, caller number 11, and here is your question. I have a feeling that Google is going to get a lot of searches on this here in the next 30 seconds. So during incubation, at what hour do the eyes begin to form? Of course, we're talking about chickens. We're talking about chickens when you go to incubate chickens in your incubator. At what hour does the eye start to begin to form or develop? So that's our question. Caller number 11, 347-637-3237. 347-637-3237. 3237. One more time. Put it on that spiral notebook right on the cover. It never changes. 347-637-3237. At what hour do the chick's eyes begin to develop during incubation? That's what we're looking for. So everybody's going to Google and Scroogle and Yahoo and Bing trying to search that right now. So give us a call. Caller number 11, 347-637-3237. And I looked it up to make sure I was correct, but also we heard this question during the Avian Bowl while we were at Cooptastic.
Oh.
So that kind of put it into my brain here. So that's what we're looking for. At what hour do the eyes begin to develop? And my research answer came up with the same answer during the Avian Bowl, so that's what we're going with. You may find it somewhere else different, but we're looking for the hour that we have here in front of us. And, of course, today the Chicken Trivia Contest is brought to you by EggCartons.com.
EggCartons.com, your discount supplier of egg cartons and poultry supplies. They carry a wide variety of egg cartons in paper, plastic, and foam, as well as a great selection of poultry supplies
including incubators, brooders, waterers, feeders, and more. Order online at eggcartons.com or call toll-free 1-888-852-5340. Free full-color catalog available. Be sure to sign up for their online newsletter for more great specials. That's eggcartons.com.
All right. Thank you very much for staying with us. A lot of people know the answer to this, Pat. The switchboard lit up, and very proud to say that a lot of people know the answer to this question. Very cool. It must have been a real quick Google search for everybody. Nope, we got a lot of smart listeners.
What hour does the eye form?
Yeah, what hour?
Well, when you think about it, in 21 days you have a whole chick.
Mm-hmm.
So once it's at the proper temperature, you can see how it would just cascade right along.
Yeah.
The development has to go at a pretty quick pace.
You're exactly right. So, all righty, let's go. You said caller number 11. I'm going to click on caller number 11 right now, and we're going to go to the phone lines. Caller calling in from area code 270.
Oh.
You're live on the air with Andy and Pat. If you'll state your name and tell us where you're calling from, please.
Okay, is this me?
That's you.
All right. My name is Suzanne. I'm calling in from Paducah, Kentucky.
Suzanne from Kentucky. Hey, I guess you'll be rooting for Kentucky here, the Final Four, right?
Oh, absolutely. They fought hard to get there.
And the only reason why I know that is because I saw it this morning on Good Morning America. I wouldn't have known who was in the Final Four. So perfect. Okay, the question is, again, playing for an eggcartons.com wire egg basket, 10-inch, valued at $20 plus shipping. At what hour do the eyes begin to form during incubation?
I'm going to say 24.
That is correct. 24 hours, the eyes begin to form during incubation. That is awesome. Congratulations up there in Kentucky, and we thank you for listening and participating and being the lucky caller today. I'm going to explain kind of what to do now. If you're not you may be a regular listener, first-time winner, I believe, from up there in Kentucky. Just send me an email to chickenwhisperer@chickenwhisperer.net, and I think Love for Poultry will put that into the chat room as well, chickenwhisperer@chickenwhisperer.net, and what we'll need is put in the title the prize you won under the subject, egg basket winner, for example, and then we'll need your name and shipping address, telephone number in case there are any shipping issues, and that's it. So the prize you won, your name, your shipping address, and telephone number, and we'll get that over to Scott, our good friend over at eggcartons.com, and get that right out to you. They're really good about fast shipping, and so we hope you will enjoy that, and we thank you for listening today. A little less than 2 minutes remain. Thank you very much for tuning in today. What a great episode with our good friend, author, and historian with the SPPA, Christine Heinrich. And you can visit her website again at poultrybookstore.com. And we thank you for tuning in, whether it be on the archive or if you tune in live. Thanks to all the great folks in the chat room today. Pat, my friend, take it away.
Okay, yes. Well, Whisper, what an amazing show. I mean, to have a show about retrieving an antiquity breed, the Java, and being able to literally revive history through a breeding program of a foundation breed. This is phenomenal. So, yes, thanks to Christine Heinrich. She is the historian for the Society of the Preservation of Poultry Antiquities, and she's also author of How to Raise Poultry, and you can go to her at the poultrybookstore.com. Of course, thanks to all our sponsors for their support, and Andy Schneider, where would we be without you? And all the poultry power and joy and love you bring to our lives. And, of course, thanks to the chat room chickeneers and all our listeners for clucking along every day, and blogtalkradio.com. So much appreciation for providing this technology, the radio, chat, and the video services that brings us all together. Blessings to all. We love you all so much, and may the flock be with you evermore. God bless everybody.